The Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verses 41 through 52. Now every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up as usual for the festival. When the festival was ended and they started to return, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Assuming that he was in the group of travelers, they went a day's journey. Then they started to look for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem to search for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety." He said to them, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth, and he was obedient to them. His mother treasured all these things in her heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in years and in divine and human favor. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I find it interesting sometimes to stop and take stock and think about how different life is today compared to in years past. For instance, for most of history, the things that we'd consider today to be major life decisions that need to be made would have largely been made for us. You know, like for most of history, where would someone live? They would simply live wherever they were born, where their family lived. What would they learn, right? Would there be an educational process? Probably they wouldn't go to school. They'd probably learn whatever was necessary to do the family occupation. And whatever that occupation would be would probably determine what they would learn. Shepherds would learn to shepherd, farmers would learn to farm. And, you know, that brings us to the occupation. What would your occupation be? If you were a boy, you would be a farmer if your father was a farmer. You'd be a blacksmith if your father was a blacksmith, a shepherd, a priest, a knight, whatever. And that was for men. For women, they would have had their own boundaries in life, right? Women would have pretty much been stuck to the home and taking care of family and keeping the house. Who would you have married in hundreds of years past? Well, you would have married probably whoever your family told you to, and there would have been a very specific level, social level, of who you'd be allowed to marry. And you'd probably marry based on the convenience of what it would do for your families and not so much about romance and love. What would you eat? You would eat whatever was available on the family farm, or maybe if you had a little money, what was available at the market. That would largely be determined by the season, of course. Even my mom, you know, living in the 50s, remembers a time in grocery stores where oranges weren't available, bananas weren't available, right? Even more so in decades and centuries past. What would you buy if you wanted to buy something, even if you did have money? Most people didn't, but if you did have money, there weren't that many options. Maybe you can buy some new clothes. Maybe you can buy some food, maybe you'd buy a new tool, but there was no Walmart throughout most of history. There were no flat screens, there were no four-wheelers for hobbies. What religion would you be? You'd, again, probably be the religion you were born into. You'd simply be from a Protestant area or a Catholic area or a Muslim area or whatever it was. So in a lot of ways, our ancestors didn't have as many choices to make in life, at least not the same types of choices that we have. They just basically live their lives according to the hands that they were dealt. So in a lot of ways, we can be thankful today that we live in an era where we have so many choices about what we want to do, what we want to purchase, where we want to go, and who we want to be. We can go to college. We can move to wherever we want, different states, even different countries. We can eat whatever food we want from around the year, right? You buy bananas and they're from Guatemala or wherever. We can choose our own spouses based on what we're looking for rather than what our family or society tells us. We can pretty much pick whatever career we want so long as we're willing to do the work for it. And the list goes on of all these choices that we get to make today. So today we have so many choices. In a lot of ways, this can be a blessing. But here's the thing about having endless choices. It seems nice, and it is nice in a lot of ways, but also it actually adds a lot of stress and uncertainty and self-doubt to life for modern people. You know, a small example of this experience, which probably we've all had. Have you ever been to a new restaurant that you haven't been to before, and it looks really nice, and you open the menu, and it's a huge menu, and you look at something, and you think, ooh, that looks like something I'd want to get. And then you look at something else, ooh, that looks like something I want to get. And sooner or later, you have four or five things that look delicious that you'd want to get. The waitress shows up and asks you what you want, and you're like, oh, wait, go to someone else. And kind of this little mini feeling of panic of what do I do? And eventually you just sort of have to pick something, right? And it will probably be fine. But that kind of experience is something that is sort of stretched in every area of our life now, where we just have so many options, and I think sometimes we don't even know what to do with ourselves. It's interesting that in the midst of this explosion of choices that we get to make in modern life, where people can choose whatever life paths they want to in large part, they've done studies where they ask people, do you feel like your life has purpose? And we might think that people would really have a strong sense of purpose because, again, you get to choose whatever purpose you want. You can pretty much live your life in a lot of ways however you want in this country today. But interestingly, the increasing reality is that many people answer the question, do you have purpose, and say, no, I do not have a strong sense of purpose in life. Lots of people are saying, it's not that my life is empty. I have lots of things I'm doing, lots of tasks that occupy my time. I have lots of mini purposes. I mean, I want to get my kids to school. The kids want to get good grades. I want to get a good job, or I want to get promoted at work, or I want to buy a new house, or get this redone in my house, or get a haircut, or buy this new thing, or that new thing, or whatever. I mean, there's endless things we do. So it's not that we're not busy. We're very, very busy. But what people are saying, many of them, is that they don't have an overarching sense of purpose that directs all the other stuff that they do. And so another study was looking at purpose, and it looked at purpose and life expectancy. And it showed that, especially in older persons, that having a sense of purpose, especially as you start retiring, actually extends life expectancy. People who retire and don't really have anything to do with themselves don't live as long as people who retire and are really into something. They're involved with their grandchildren, or they're volunteering here, or they're tinkering around in a workshop, whatever it is. Having purpose actually extends life. So having a sense of overarching purpose is a big benefit in life, and not having an overarching sense of purpose can be a big problem for people. Because without an identity that involves some sense of purpose, we start to feel lost in life. Especially in a world that constantly bombards us with millions of choices and asks us, what do we want to be and what do we want to do? It's easy to start feeling lost. Well, in today's gospel, lost is exactly what Jesus is on the literal level, right? In this story, Jesus is a boy, and he and his family are on a journey to Jerusalem. It's the time for the Passover, which was a yearly festival, and good Jews were, as much as they were able, supposed to head to Jerusalem, where the temple was, and celebrate the festival of the Passover. And it's not just probably Jesus' immediate family who's there. It's likely that large numbers of Jewish people from all over that area are kind of traveling together. And so instead of thinking of Jesus and his family, it's probably like the whole village or a large part of the village, extended family, neighbors, friends, all around. And this probably helps to explain how in this big group of people, what happens next, right, where Jesus gets lost. Well, all this family is heading to the Passover festival. They do what they need to do, and then they're heading back to Nazareth. And it's as they're heading back to Nazareth that Jesus' parents realize that they've lost Jesus. And there probably isn't a more terrifying thought for any parent than the idea of losing a child, right? The trauma of even not knowing where your kid is for 1 minute, let alone for 3 days. And it was 3 days before they found Jesus. But for 3 days, they're searching around Jerusalem. They don't know where he is until finally, after 3 days, they go to the temple and they find Jesus. And the temple, of course, was the central holy place of Judaism. It's where God was said to dwell. And so when they find Jesus, Mary comes up to him, and we get this remarkable exchange between Jesus and his parents. And it says, when Jesus' parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, child, why have you treated us like this? Look, your father and I have been searching for you in great anxiety. Jesus said to them, why are you searching for me? "Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" If I were the dad here, I would be pretty angry at Jesus, right? Not only has he gotten himself lost, but when you go to him and say, "Explain yourself," rather than apologizing, he basically rebukes you. You know, "Did you not know that I needed to be in my father's house? What's your problem, parents? You know, what's the problem?" And not only that, but when he's saying "my father," is he talking about Joseph? No, I mean, so it's doubly kind of hurtful. But laying all that aside, I think one thing to remember in this story is the point of it is really what Jesus is trying to say here, right? Getting away from the trauma that we would all feel and the anger that we'd feel at Jesus as his parents. I think what is really going on here is Jesus is trying to answer an important question that all of us will experience in this life, that all of us will ask. And the question is, what do we do when we're lost? Where do we go when we're lost? You know, it's great in life when life is good and when we feel like we know who we want to be and we know what we want to do. That's great. But there are times in life where we start to feel lost. And where do we go and what do we do when we're lost? And of course, there are lots of ways to feel lost. In this story, literally, Jesus is lost, but we can be lost in lots of other ways. You know, it's funny, one of my earliest memories went from, I'd say I was like 1.5 or 2, I can remember getting lost for about 10 seconds. I was following my older brother and my dad, and we were kind of in this apartment building that had one of these big push doors, and my dad was walking first, and my brother was second. And I remember they went through this door, and I tried to go through, and the door slammed. And I remember hitting on the door, and I probably, you know, they probably knew I was gone within 10 or 30 seconds. But I remember this as quite traumatic, right, for 10 or 30 seconds when you're 1 year old or 1.5 or 2 or whatever I was. I mean, that was a traumatic experience to be separated from my parents and feel like I was lost. And we can feel lost in lots of ways, not just when we're kids. You know, a lot of people in college, they're choosing a major, people are choosing careers, even as we get older, trying to figure out, how do you parent this child that I created? What am I supposed to do to turn them into good people? How am I going to get ahead? Is my career choice correct? Do I want to change my career? Do we want to move? You know, financial problems could kick in. There can be conflicts and broken relationships in family. And of course, death, you know, that's one of the biggest things where we can feel lost. We lose a loved one, and suddenly that really puts us through the ringer, where we don't know what to do, and we can almost feel like we don't know who we are anymore. So there's lots of ways we can feel lost, and those are a few, but you can probably think of your own experiences where you felt lost in life. Well, in this story, Jesus is trying to help his parents see that at least on the spiritual level, as long as Jesus was in the presence of God, was in the presence of his Father, he could never be truly lost. And I think Jesus is trying to say that as hard as life can be in this world, and it is certainly hard in many ways, we can never be fully lost as long as we're in God's presence. This is not to say that we'll never feel lost. This is not to say that we won't have challenges. This is not to say that God will fix our problems immediately in the short term. But it is to say that we can always have hope that God is in the process of restoring everything that is broken. And as long as we stay in God's presence and we hear that message of hope and we feel that message of hope, we can know that someday our lives will be healed and this world will be healed. And so we can't be completely lost. And it's also to say that Christians don't really have to worry about what the meaning of life is. I don't know, you know, sometimes you meet people, especially kind of in their 20s, who start asking, what is this life about, you know? And the idea a lot of times is that life is this complex mystery, and we have to figure out what is the meaning of life. And, you know, this is certainly a good question to ask at some point. But if we look at the words of Jesus, Jesus in the Bible says that, you know, the meaning of life is pretty straightforward. It's not complex, right? In the Old Testament, there's a great verse that says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God," right? To act justly and love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. It's not complex stuff. In the New Testament, Jesus says this kind of thing a couple times in a few different ways, but he says here, what are the greatest commandments? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. When God and when Jesus are really speaking simply, we get pretty easy commandments. We get pretty easy instruction on what the meaning of life is, right? God says it's to center our lives on his love, to know God's love for ourselves, and to share it with others. It's a beautifully simple purpose. So, of course, in this world, we still have choices to make, and each of us will choose our own individual path in some ways. But what unites us as Christ followers is that even though we all have different paths and we all have different experiences in life, we are all heading towards the same goal, the same purpose, the same destination. And that destination is the same destination Jesus went to. It was God's house, where the love of Christ is totally present. And so God bless you on your journey with God. Amen.